Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hey everyone, it is an EOL Extra. And I'm back with my friend, our illustrious third chair, the guy who finds a way to just gnaw on the straps when he's in it, Mr. 27 himself. Hello, Byron.
Nom, 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 nom. Good straps.
Those are not made of fruit roll-ups. I don't know what Rockstar told you, but that is not true.
She lied to me again.
And the sponge is not Twinkie, so stop eating that. You're going to have terrible gastrointestinal pain. Just saying.
Oh, what fish fingers and custard won't give you? Yeah, I mean that.
Oh, that grosses out my wife so bad. She saw him eating it in a scene. She goes, "Oh my God, is that fish fingers and gut?" Well, it's been about a year since Byron and I have gone off on an EOL tangent of our favorite Time Lord, and we both watched the first half of Series 7A, which would be the first five episodes of Series 7 before we get to the 50th anniversary year, and we're going to kind of talk about those and what we think and vaguely speculate about the future. Because I try to stay away from spoilers as best I can, because Stephen Moffat just makes it so much more fun to try and guess. And we'll go through that. So if you have not watched the latest series of Doctor Who, then I would stop listening to this EOL Extra right now, because we are going to be very open with our spoilers.
Yes, okay. The spoiler alerts shall hit plaid.
Oh
so
my gosh, they hit plaid! Oh my gosh, Spaceball 1! And there is a countdown here. 3, 2, 1. You still with us? Okay, let's talk Doctor Who.
Where are we? Spaceship, right?
Not just any spaceship. The Parliament of the Daleks.
The asylum must be cleansed. The Predator of the Daleks will be deployed.
I'm not a predator, just a man with a plan.
Doctor! Doctor!
They killed all the Daleks.
Who do you think?
This season looks amazing. The whole idea was to kind of give you a movie in 1 hour. Every episode was to have something very bold and just stunning, and the camera angles prove that. And the very first episode comes right out of the box. And by the way, I'm skipping Pond Life. I don't really want to discuss Pond Life. Maybe we will at the end. Moving away from Pond Life, which was the prequel to the series, 7, is Asylum of the Daleks. What did you think of this episode, my friend?
Wow. Probably one of the best episodes of Doctor Who that I have seen in a very long time, and that is saying a lot. Oh my God.
Wow,
that's all I can
okay.
say. Just, oh
you liked
my
it,
God.
I think. He liked it. Likes it.
I did.
Wow. And I'm so uneven on this episode. And I know I'm weird because Buddy Brannan, who also watches, and a couple of others really adore this episode. And I'm kind of like weird in pacing. And for me, the story that was not the main story was more interesting for me. Amy and Rory's story, in fact, was devastating. It was just, oh my gosh, the relationship piece. I mean, there's two stories there because, A, they feel good to have a conversation about the relationship while they're standing in a ship full of Daleks. Daleks who are gone completely crazy mad for no other reason. And then the whole conversation that Amy and Rory are starting to feel the effects of traveling with the Doctor. And we've never really seen someone over years and years and years, maybe Jamie with the second Doctor, but we've never really seen companions travel with the Doctor for such a long time and what their relationship is like when he's not there. And that's what I think is really fascinating, because they really start to talk about what it's like to be a companion. Because, I don't know, in new series Who, more than any other, there's this cause and effect relationship. If you go back to, I don't know, a school reunion, and the 10th Doctor seeing Sarah Jane, and how she has all these years of pent up emotions. And she even makes the comment, you know, when you go off, what are we supposed to do? And certainly Torchwood, whenever they learn that there's other worlds out there, Gwen says it often, which is, I can't go back to normal life. How could I go back to normal life? This is awesome, you know? But it never seems to end well for many people.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, we've sort of seen the life of the companion after the doctor is gone more and more. A good example for that is in Big Finish, when Charlie leaves the doctor and is picked up again by an earlier incarnation of the doctor. And there's all kinds of emotion towards the doctor in his later incarnation that winds up kind of being vented towards the earlier doctor. And this version of the doctor doesn't know this companion yet. And, you know, it's really sad to see the doctor and companions part ways because, like you said, it's a life of adventure. The world seems so small once you've been in that blue police box. And how do you go back to normal?
Well, if we're going to bring Big Finish into it, Lucy Miller. I mean, there's a perfect character that literally has a falling out with the doctor and just has a hard time dealing with her life after post-TARDIS, you know? It is definitely interesting. Now, again, that's the B story. The A story is amazing. Here, you know, the Daleks have found a way to convince the Doctor to do their dirty work. They send him down to the planet with Rory and Amy. There's a threat there because there's these little invisible microbe thingies that are going to turn you into a Dalek. The Doctor sees all different types and versions of Daleks, and he interacts with somebody. And I happen to recognize the actress. I don't know if you did, but I kind of recognized that was Jenna Louise Coleman early on with the first scene. That was like, oh my God, that's the new companion. What? Why?
Why I suck at that, by the way. I'm just horrible. Hey, did you notice that this actress was in this movie and was also in this episode? And then they turned out to be the lead character in that thing?
Well, she's kind of cutie. And so I may have stared at a picture or two of Jenna Louise Coleman. And so I recognized her right off on my big 43-inch plasma screen television. It may have hit pause.
Gotcha. Right.
Yeah. Oh, look who that is. So we don't know who she is, if she's related to the Christmas special, if that's the same character or meant to be the same character as who's going to be the next companion. We don't know, but it was very shocking to have that show right up. I mean, like early on, and I didn't see that she was a Dalek. I mean, honestly, it wasn't until he actually went through intensive care that I started to go, wait a minute, I think I know the end of this.
Yeah,
because I literally just kind of turned my brain off and was looking at all the pretty lights and all that exterminates eggs.
You know what? Great. Okay, here's a rule for you. If you should ever wind up traveling with the doctor, okay? And you see a rusty Dalek sitting there, not doing much, don't touch it.
Yeah.
Why? Why?
Totally agree.
Why is it that these companions always wind up accidentally touching an almost dead Dalek and all of a sudden, exterminate!
Exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, that goes right into the, why not take off your high heels? You can run faster. And,
don't run up the stairs when the monster's chasing you.
When he came in with the big knife and, you know, every Halloween movie that ever rolls through there. I agree. I mean, sometimes characters are stupid in order to make things work or to give you a visual. And they're just gorgeous visuals in this episode. Although the sense of scale of that ship was weird. And I guess, I mean, it was a luxury liner and I've been on a cruise ship before. So I guess you have big, you know, giant areas and then little small areas. But it felt really, really weird with that. And transmatting into the TARDIS, that one kind of bothered me a little bit because, you know, you're not supposed to be able to do that unless, I guess, she recognizes that it is the doctor and recognizes it's a key. But that kind of bothered me just a little. It's a little niggly, in episode 342, it's like the Blinovich effect and other things like that. So it's those are little minor things that bother me. For overall, I'm kind of, believe it or not, I'm a B- on this episode. I'm kind of it didn't wow me the way I thought it was going to wow me. And I don't really care about the reset. Doctor Who, doctor, ooh, you know, it just, okay, fine. You know, he's going back into the shadows, you know, they're resetting the character and that makes sense. But what happens is that she didn't just get it away from the Daleks. Apparently other people have begun to forget who the doctor is. And that just seems really weird because you've been around for 1,200 years and 11 generations. And I, well, okay. If you rebooted the universe, I guess I had to get over that too. So anything is possible. I mean, it is a story about a guy in a big blue box. So where's reality fit into that? Perhaps dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Now, listen, I found something.
What is it?
I have no idea. Do you want to find out?
Dinosaurs on a spaceship.
You can help me so much more.
Are those pterodactyls?
Yes. Oh, I'm so scared.
What do you think of the snakes on a plane-esque dinosaurs on a spaceship?
Well, I was kind of waiting for the Jurassic Park moment where they had the big of pile them. Of dinosaur dung, and
well, it's close.
It was a cool episode.
There's the kiss moment, you know, with the tongue and all of that, and then there's the scene with the raptors, where literally it was almost clever girl.
Yeah,
I mean that was like over. Like, okay, that was a sledgehammer to the face. Yeah, I get it. It's Jurassic Park.
Well, yeah, and I did enjoy that episode. It wasn't my favorite episode in the entire series, and I bet you we'll differ in opinions on that as well. But I did enjoy the Triceratops riding with the golf ball with the vegetable material on it, and it was definitely a cool episode, but not one of my absolute favorites.
I was looking at the pterodactyl, and I asked my wife, "Is that the pterodactyl model from Torchwood?"
I was wondering if it was a vortosaur, whatever those things are called. You know, the pterodactyl type things that
Or the one from last year energy. With the one with the episode of the Wedding of River Song at the beginning. It's I was looking to see if it was just like, you know, Star Trek VI, where they took the explosion from Star Trek Generations, took the explosion of the Klingon ship from Star Trek VI and reversed it and just moved it slower. That's how it wasn't a new explosion of a Klingon ship. It was the one from Star Trek VI. Anyway, so I don't have a problem with this one. As far as comedy episodes go, this one doesn't bother me. I tend not to like things like Unicorn and the Wasp or other humor-based Shakespeare Code. Oof, I do not like that episode. Mm-hmm. This one I'm okay with. It doesn't do much. It's, again, gorgeous. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Camera angles and everything. Most of the people feel that the ending is not very doctor-like, and allowing the villain to be killed off in such a really nasty fashion is not very doctor-like. I will point people back to Family of Blood, because when the doctor has been so moved, he has done some gnarly stuff. And
Water on Mars, for sure.
Waters of Mars is awesome. Yes, absolutely. Time Lord Victorious. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's gotten to darker places. It always amazes me when people kind of sort of forget that. And he is a very dark and complex character. You certainly in Ninth Generation, Christopher Eccleston, people have to say, you know, oh, he's damaged goods because he's just had the Time War. No, that to me, that's always been there. Like, the Sixth Doctor had it. The First Doctor had it. The Second Doctor has it as well, where there is that kind of darkness to him that
Tom Baker, while he was often exceptional, a very whimsical doctor, there are times when he just bores a hole into the companion with his eyes, and you just see this darkness bubbling up, and he manages to keep it under a whimsical cover, but there have been times where Tom Baker seemed quite dark, and you didn't want to cross him sometimes,
especially during the Hinchcliffe era. Absolutely. So and you know, there were times where they played off that, like Leela, you know, the whole My Fair Lady, have him be more of Dr. Doolittle trying to teach a savage kind of thing. But no, I do like the darker side of the doctor, and certainly there are certain parts of his psyche, especially if you look at like Amy's Choice, you know, he knows exactly what's going on. You know, there's only one person who would know me this well. Or even the episode last year about when he has to break Amy's faith in the God complex in order to get her to stop believing in him to save her life. And he just kicks Amy pretty hard. So I don't have a problem with this, certainly because he threatened his friends and it's been inferred that he was traveling alone. And whenever the Doctor travels alone, he has a tendency to act like this. Like you said, Waters of Mars, he's been running from things and the Doctor has a tendency to run away from a problem. And when he does that, he does have a tendency to go more dark. So I didn't have a problem with that. And I don't mind this episode.
You know what bugs me a little bit about all of the new TV these days? Again, here I come sounding all crotchety and, you know, whatever.
Get off my lawn. Yes.
Get off my tarnish. You know, everything, we're gonna take DuckTales and we're gonna make it darker. we're gonna
Battlestar Galactica
stuff.
We're
gonna take the monsters and make it more dramatic and darker.
Mockingbird Lane was so awful. Eddie Izzard
didn't actually
is like the
see
best
it.
Part. Oh, I have it on DVR and I can only make it through halfway. It's just,
oh man.
Eddie Izzard is the best part about it. But I see why it's not going to full series. It made a lot of sense to me. It was a dramedy. You can find that on Hulu, folks. I wouldn't, though.
Now, with Doctor Who, though, it makes a little sense because you have a very complex character who goes from one end of the spectrum to the other all the time. And it's not like we're reinventing the Doctor and making him suddenly this dark, tortured soul. He's always had a bit of that, but we're just seeing a lot more of it now because we're sort of delving into the last of his regenerations and after the Time War. And so it's to be expected, and it doesn't bother me as much. But, you know, it bothers me in other things that don't belong in the realm of darker.
Well, an episode that's very bright but still touches on a dark storyline is definitely A Town Called Mercy.
I'm the Doctor. This is no need to stand.
Interesting. Don't worry! Everything is completely under control!
Everyone who isn't an American, drop your gun.
Face me!
The evil bad guy here compares himself to the Doctor, actually starts going through a list of attributes and starts saying, "You, we are a lot alike," which does not make the Doctor very happy at all, because he wants to believe that they are not alike. Here is a gentleman who has experimented on people for the good of his planet and turned people into these cyborgish things and, you know, did horrible things in the name of quote-unquote science and the ability to win their war, and is trying to repent for these sins by helping a small Texas town live better. He's given them electricity before they're supposed to have it. He's cured diseases. He's literally trying to make up for what he's done and all these atrocities. In the meantime, one of the last weapons he ever created wants to kill him for making him the way he is. And there are some parallels there. And there is that moment where the Doctor gives in to his darker nature and marches the bad guy out there, and Amy's the one that ends up pulling him back, as what humans usually do, which is a reinforcement of what the series is about, is the Doctor needs a companion. It's not that he likes that or like he likes showing off. It's that he has to have the duality of the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there needs to be someone there to rein him in when he is being caught up in the moment and he feels that he can just do whatever he wants. He needs that reality check once in a while.
And that's turn left. Remember, what if the Doctor had not stopped with the Rachnos? He would have drowned, you know, doing what he did. That was the whole point of Donna turning, you know, turn left. And that's a great opportunity to kind of sort of get an idea of why Donna was so great for the Doctor. Why that to me, in my mind, that she's the greatest companion of the new series. I am a huge Donna fan. Yes, I didn't like her in Runaway Bride like most people.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no. And I feel bad for Catherine Tate. It was not her fault. That's what she was asked to do. And she did it really, really well. But she just rearranges my thought pattern with the Dr. Donna. And I admire her a lot. She's one of my favorite characters. I don't mind, again, here, the relationship between Amy and Rory. Rory doesn't have much to do, but he's definitely there. Amy is a big part of this. Yeah, he does. He's not killed off like usually when it's not like his South Park moment, you know, of, oh no, they killed Rory, those bastards, you know, because that does have a tendency to happen. But Amy is not the same Amy from Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. In Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, she's the veteran. She's the wily person that's learned that she can read things with the TARDIS and she knows to go pressing buttons. And she actually kind of holds her own, you know, kind of the way that, say, Anissa would or somebody like that. So she
could she please tell him to stop driving with the brake on, though? I mean, God.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't make the noise. And, and this one was shot in Spain, looks gorgeous, has a fantastic guest appearance by Farscape's own Ben Browder. Yes, I know, Stargate SG-1, but he was John before he was ever on Stargate to me. Great cameo appearance there, looks gorgeous again. The episode moves at a pretty decent pace and has some great stuff. So, I mean, definitely not a bad episode. If I'm going to rate this one, I'm more of a B+ on this one, whereas Dinosaurs, I'm straight up B. So I'm okay with either of these. Not a clunker in the bunch so far.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the slower of the episodes in terms of, you know, it's not as much fast-paced action, but there's a lot more mental character stuff going on, a lot of character development, which is what I really enjoy. The action stuff is enjoyable, and we do get a lot of it, but I really enjoy getting to know the people in the story and developing some character there.
And Matt Smith's reaction when he starts looking at the footage in the spaceship of what had happened, he does nail that character down so well. He's one of my favorite doctors. So coming up after the break, we'll get into the last two episodes of Series 7A, and we'll talk a little bit more about possible futures, all here on this EOL Extra. More after a break.
Hello, and welcome to today's lottery drawing. Good luck. And here's today's winning numbers. First one up, it's not yours. Second one, not yours. And another number that's not yours. Okay, this is one number that's yours. It's a 5, but you don't get any money for that. And the final number is not yours.
Yep, so chances are you're not going to hit the lottery anytime soon. Don't get us wrong. The lottery can be fun every now and then. Just please don't rely on it for your future savings. How about this? Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte every day. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Ride your bike instead of buying all that gas. These changes alone can save you thousands a year. Thousands. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. Feed that piggy bank. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Every time we flew away with the Doctor, we'd just become part of his life.
Come with me.
But he never stood still long enough to become part of ours. Except once.
Haven't you seen them?
The year of the slow invasion.
I've recommended we treat this as a hostile incursion.
There are soldiers all over my house, and I'm in my pants.
We have two lives. Real life and Doctor life.
Our best hope now is each other.
What do we do?
Choose.
Welcome back to discussing Series 7A of Doctor Who. We have two more episodes to go. My wife wasn't a big fan of The Power of Three. I kind of like it. I really, really do. This one actually is a bit of an A, and it shouldn't be, but I do like The Power of Three, the Year of the Slow Invasion. What do you think, buddy?
Another one for, you know, slow in terms of action, but massive character development.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't really hit much on getting to meet Brian in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Yeah.
But we got to see more of Brian, and I like him. It's kind of like Donna's dad. I really enjoyed him as well.
Exactly. There was a lot of Wilf kind of there. Yeah. And that kind of sort of, it's the father figure. And for some reason, that's when the doctor starts to really open up, you know, because, you know, Rory's dad asks him what happens to these people that travel with you. And he's brutally honest. You know, he starts going through just exactly what could happen while traveling with him. And you really get loss and lament And I'll come back to this because I have a theory, and I've talked to some guys. I've written the guys at the Doctor Who podcast, and I tend to agree with what they were saying about this half of the season overall. But that scene is very telling for many, 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 many reasons. And the big foe really isn't the story. I mean, yeah, there are these cubes and nobody knows why they're there. You know, there's the loving nod to Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart, of course, Brigadier General, in that his daughter has taken over UNIT, which is nice. I think that's great. And it's interesting to see UNIT brought back into it. I would love eventually maybe a UNIT spinoff or something like that. But Big Finish is already sort of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The alien threat is just there. It's just a foil. It's just an act three. That's all it's there for. Because this is more of a deconstruction of Amy, Rory, and the Doctor. Who they are and what they do. And there's that awesome scene where Amy's sitting there saying, traveling with you, it feels like I'm running away. You know, it feels like we're running away. And he talks to her, but it's one of the rare moments you see the Doctor open up and he's genuinely moved in ways that he hasn't been with other companions. And he explains why, you know. And each Doctor has their own personality. And his is tied very much to Amy and Rory, because that's who he saw when he, you know, materialized as the 11th for the first time. So for me, this episode is kind of an A. It shouldn't be, but I really like it in that there's just so much character. And yeah, there's some broken parts. I know people have complained about the heart-stopping bit, and it's a little goofy with the, oh, look, there just so happened to be a defibrillator up against that wall, and on and on and on.
Well, come on, there have been much goofier things in the world of Doctor Who, like all of the fat cells coming out of people and turning into giant monsters. Sure. I mean, if you're going to complain about goofy the things, adipose, that's one
which,
of the least.
Which really was, let's sell this action figure at Christmas. That's really what I think the adipose were. Let's have a plushie doll to be able to stick in all the greater stores in London area. And there's a little bit of that here, too, because this felt like an RTD episode. It's almost like Trinity Wells should have shown up at any point in that huge montage of, you know, news clips of, you know, blah, blah is happening. The world is worried. And it's Trinity is usually there. I don't know why they didn't go back and get her. Maybe that was pushing the RTD moment just a little too much. And that's what really shocks me is I don't want the RTD era at all. And this is very RTD, but I'm willing to give it a pass because I really enjoy the character relationships. And that is why I'm mixed on the final episode that we're going to talk about today, which is Angels Take Manhattan.
You don't believe that statues can move. And you're right, they can't. When you're looking.
New York is policed by angels. Every time you try to escape, you get zapped back in time. The city that never sleeps.
The angels will come.
And
I think they're coming for you.
Placing someone back in time creates time energy. And that is what the angels feed on.
What the hell are you doing?
Any ideas?
Byron, I'll let you go first.
When I saw the preview or the trailer at the end of episode 4, I went, oh Lord, not another Angels episode.
Yeah, agreed.
They are typically good, but it's like too much of a good thing and you just get tired of it. Kind of like with the Daleks. You see too many of the Daleks episodes one after another and they just wear on you after a while. So at first I thought, here we go again. And it wasn't a horrible episode, but again, not one of my absolute favorites.
The difference I would say is that the Daleks have been made shadows of their former selves. They were menacing, but you know, dizzy Dalek, you know, kind of moments. They've been made very, 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 you know, kind of run down. And so they came back with the episode Dalek and in the first series and really just took the world by storm. But you know, over time and time and time again, and we'll skip the end of time. Journey's End completely. It just really, you know, runs down over time. And I am way more the Dalek fan than I am a Cyberman fan. The Angels are weird in that I am not a huge fan of them because it is kind of a one-note pony. It is the one trick over and over and over again. Although the scene with Rory and the baby statues in the dark was kind of, I was like, set fire to everything. Find something to light on fire. You know, it was another one of those moments.
And they put these people in this situation where as soon as you look away, they're coming after you. And it's the same story over and over again. And all we got to do is, you know, just get one blind person in there and see what happens.
You're pretty much done for that. Yeah. Yeah, you're going back in time. Sorry, Helen Keller. My top five peeves for this episode. Just
you have five really, peeves?
Oh, wow. Dude, yes. Just number one, that opening. I don't care how cinematic it is. I don't care how Sam Spade it was. To me, that was just 5.5 long-ass minutes of not seeing any of my main characters. And it was a long setup and really didn't work for me. I know people loved it and all of that, but I've seen all that. It was called Blink. I know how these guys work. I don't need you to give me this long, winding setup for the premise, which doesn't do me any good.
In fact, that's something I've always hated in the classic Doctor Who episodes where they give you this huge, long setup before the TARDIS ever shows up. And I'm like, I came here to watch the Doctor, not some guy, you know, excavating for fossils or something.
I still know what's going to happen to him. Who cares? You know?
Yeah.
So there's that. I, of course, the Statue of Liberty piece, you know, people have debated this online. They were on Winter Key, so they were out near the water. No, I understand that you had to do it and that it was a Ghostbusters moment and you felt like you needed to, but I really wish you hadn't. And it just doesn't make much sense to me. So there's my second one. My third one, I don't even get the point of the guy who talks to River Song. You know, the guy who's hiring everybody to learn more about angels, that whatever. and of course, he gets dispatched with rather quickly. There is more of the false endings here. This has just as many false endings as, say, Return of the King from Lord of the Rings. And so that bothers me. But I will say that the part that bothers me the most is that I'm not sure that I really kind of like the way that the Doctor reacts to Amy before the last thing that happens to Amy. And a lot of people have debated whether, you know, Matt Smith overacted in that scene or all of that. I don't know, but it just seems very strange. And River seems very detached, which is really interesting. And I adore River Song. Any episode with River in it, I'll watch. In fact, if you want to have some fun, just sit down with Netflix and watch the River episodes, just back to back to back. And it's amazing how much a River's character goes all the way back to Silence of the Library.
Wow. I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah. There's a line at the end of Forest of the Dead, which is time can be rewritten. And she yells back, don't you dare, not one word. It's a line that's actually said again by Matt Smith in The Wedding of River Song when they're going through the flux and she says time can be rewritten and he says the line. So there's a lot of little callbacks to her various episodes. I mean, from the very beginning of the first time he ever sees River, she's in an astronaut's outfit. So, you know, there's, and she says, hello, sweetie. So you tell me there, the Moffat had an idea of what he was going to do with those characters.
Somebody should watch them from the point of River Song chronologically and then watch them again from the point of the Doctor chronologically and see how
there
that goes.
There is a YouTube clip, which the BBC did in order to explain the chronology of River Song, because people had that exact same question of what was her timeline. And there's another, oh my gosh, if you go looking for First Night and Last Night and Bad Night, there are little scenes that take place after season six and kind of explain things. And there's one particular scene in particular with River that is very telling. And basically what happens is the Doctor runs into different versions of the Doctor and River, and he's set down in certain places and another River walks in from another part of the timeline. And it's various points on her timeline, like from beginning to middle to near the end. And that's the most touching part of all. I liked Amy. I know some people don't like Amy. I adore Rory. Rory grew on me over time. And I kind of like Rory takes charge and does some really great stuff. Certainly his role in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, when he, you know, shows that he has a role. He's not just there to be the person to explain everything to the new guy who's writing in the TARDIS. As they often say, it's your turn. You know?
Yeah, he's not the red shirt. He's not the pushover as much as people would like to believe he is.
Although he does have that line that says, I've been killed before.
Well, that's true. But he always comes back from his red shirt moment.
Yeah. And their acting on the rooftop is just wonderful and just very, very moving. And that relationship is fulfilled in that episode. And I think it's a good... It gave me closure on the two characters. Naturally, I'm not really going to worry about where they are, how their lives were. And I'm not going to play with the whole... You know, because some people are like, well, why can't they just go back? Or River could go back with the Vortex Manipulator, but why doesn't the Doctor? And, you know, that doesn't make any sense. He's got the TARDIS. He'd go back and get them. I kind of go with the Doctor on this, which is, you know, that's their natural end. He knew, you know, he knew he hates goodbyes and he knew not to do that. And this is where I come down to the theory. I think that much of parts of season five, series five, series six, and almost all of season seven is shortly after this episode, after Angels Take Manhattan. I think the Doctor travels backwards in time, hilly-nilly and yon, to see his two favorite companions again.
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he has done that with going back to before he met Rose to say his goodbye without her really knowing it.
Yeah, as the 10th Doctor. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's sentimental like that. He doesn't admit it, but he is sentimental like that. And, you know, the Doctor has said before, I always check on all of you. I always know, you know, and certainly he talks about that in Big Finish. He's like, you know, that time has ended. That is, everything has an end, you know? And so I love the concept. Now that's a bigger question, not what's River's timeline. What's the Doctor's timeline with Rory and Amy? What took place first with them? And, because you can easily see that he's not exactly sure where he is with them in the Power of Three. He's not, you know, he's almost doing that thing he does with River, which is, you know, where are we now? Or what has happened? Or blah, blah, blah. So I honestly think that maybe he saw something in the Tesseract and he knows his own history and future, even undeleting himself from the universe, which is what he kind of admits to, because now River was pardoned because she never really killed this person that no one has ever heard of, which, you know, it's interesting, but man, it just breaks my brain. And it's more that timey-wimey stuff that Moffat is so incredibly good at.
Oh yeah. It's when you think about all of the things that brought companions to the Doctor, like in episode one of the new series, the guy goes on the internet and has photographic evidence of the Doctor's existence. And that's how Rose begins to learn about the Doctor. But now you've just erased yourself from history. So doesn't that kind of create a bit of a paradox? I mean, unless he has a special browser that can defeat paradoxes somehow. I don't know.
And you know, how many times has he used the oncoming storm or that line to use fear in his favor, you know?
So well, that's all gone.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely interesting because there's that whole bit in A Good Man Goes to War where she's like, your name means this on my planet because of you, you know? So that, you know, it's a paradox within a paradox, and we've seen those before, and it's very interesting. And there, you know, could be a way of just writing around that. He will, more than likely, Stephen will make a casual line about that, and we'll just have to deal with it. But as a whole, were you okay with the way that the Pons bid farewell?
Yeah, it was time for them to part ways, I think. And I don't like seeing companions go. It's never something you look forward to, but I think they did it well. And well, let me put I'm an anxious
asterisk
to see
by asterisk. Adric. An well, asterisk by Adric. That was, I was perfectly fine for Adric to go. I will go out publicly and say, no, Adric could go.
But what did you think about the reappearance of Adric in Big Finish either. Episodes?
I think that's interesting. I'm not a big Tegan Jovanka fan. In fact, I'm not a giant Fifth Doctor fan, and nothing against Peter Davison, because one of the most gorgeous companions ever, Sarah Sutton. I am a part of SAS, the secret admirers of Sarah Sutton. The Fifth Doctor, I guess, because I'm an American and I'm from the South, is about as British as you can get. Maybe there were some cultural imperatives that I didn't get. Mm-hmm. But I generally was not a huge fan of the Fifth Doctor. But as I got older and I started to rewatch many episodes, I tend to fall back to John Pertwee as one of my favorite doctors. And
oh man, me too. Absolutely.
I know it's wrong, and it's Action Man, and it's James Bond, and he's in a cravat, and it's just Austin Powers and Unit Family and all that. But I absolutely adore the Third Doctor era. It just great stuff.
I have trouble watching Fifth Doctor episodes without thinking of the TV show All Things Great and Small.
Right. All creatures, yes. Yeah.
They're all creatures great and small. It's difficult.
Yeah.
So, you know, before we ask the questions of what's coming to us in Season 7, Part B, I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Have you ever walked past a porta potty and thought, TARDIS, I should look in there and see if it's bigger on the inside? Because that actually happened to me the other day. There's a house down the street. They're doing construction.
You go by looking for porta potties and knocking on them to see if they're TARDISes? All right, okay.
Big blue porta potty. Big blue porta potty right there on the sidewalk as I'm walking past it to go to work. I'm thinking, you know,
that's it. That's what I was looking for.
Blue box. I really should look and just make sure, because they're always saying you're going to walk right past it. No one's going to think to look in there. You know, it's a. So I had to redo
my office, and my wife asked me what color did I want the walls, and I said, you know, TARDIS blue, and she's like, yeah, right, okay, nerd, get over it. And I reminded her that nerds are in denial, geeks admit who they are. The thing that I did bring up and left on my desktop was the Roundel TARDIS wallpaper that you could actually put up, and it would have the inside of the TARDIS look from Fifth and Sixth Doctor era. And I was also told that wasn't going to happen. I was very broken up about that.
Oh, man.
I know.
You know what you need is they have a towel. And always remember where your towel is.
Yes, yeah, correct.
I think it's on ThinkGeek. Yeah. It's a big TARDIS towel. What I want to do is pin the top two corners of the TARDIS towel in front of my door, so I always have a TARDIS that I can go into. That would be cool.
I always wanted a TARDIS key. I had two girls in my science fiction club when I was, you know, back in high school that had TARDIS keys, and I always kept forgetting to buy them when I was at convention. I had plenty of comm badges. Good Lord, I had lots of, you know, comm badges, but I could never find a good TARDIS key. It was always, man, that's so close, but no, it's not exactly what I want. So I've always wanted a good TARDIS key. The future. Well, we've got the Christmas episode coming up on Christmas. So that'll be the introduction. Jenna Louise Coleman, our new companion. I saw that there was a preview the other day for this. I haven't really looked at it. It was something for the children in need. And I'm going to, again, stay as spoiler-free as I can. Not that that helped me with last year's Christmas special. Arg. I could have been spoiled on that and not had to watch it. God, what a disappointment. That is almost like getting socks and underwear for Christmas, honestly.
I got another bad episode of Doctor Who for Christmas.
Yay.
I got a rock.
Wow, this is almost like Fear Her on DVD. Yay. Thank you, Steven. How did you know?
According to Wikipedia, there are supposed to be guest stars of Tom Ward and Richard E. Grant as the villain. So I guess we shall see. And it's supposed to take place in Victorian times.
That's never happened before. I also saw a rumor the Silurian couple, the Silurian and her lady friend, are actually supposed to be in that episode as well. That actually went flying by on Twitter. So that may or may not be true, but there's definitely that. I'll tell you what else I saw on Twitter. Neil Gaiman is going to write another episode. The man who wrote The Doctor's Wife is writing another episode, and the title leaked out. It is called The Last Cyberman. Interesting if true. And I have speculated to Mr. 27, is it someone from Mundus or Telos? Because I don't think it's a serious cybernetics Cyberman. I don't think it's one of the new age Cybermen. I think we're back to the soup handle traditional, or the half human, half, you know, metal 10th planet Cybermen, which are my favorite Cybermen. That would be interesting. There's a lot of stories there. We've never really completely closed the door on the original series Cybermen.
So how did the title, The Last of the Cybermen?
The Last of the Cybermen. Yeah, one of the two.
How did we find out the title of that episode? How did that leak?
Someone proved that it was a script, and so they took a picture of the front page. that had the production code and everything on it is what I read on Blaster, BLASTR.com, which is a offshoot of what used to be called the Sci-Fi Channel before they turned into SIFI.
Oh, yeah, SIFI.
SIFI, yeah, it sounds like a disease. It's neat that Neil Gaiman is coming back. Like the guys at Radio Free Scaro said, it should just be called, the title should be called, Thank You for the Next Hugo Award, Please, because that's probably what's going to happen. I think it's interesting because, you know, we're coming down to the 50th anniversary. And we're going to have lots of callbacks. There have been so much speculation that will the Eighth Doctor come back? You know, are there going to be cameos from old doctors? The Colin Baker himself has said, you know, it has to be the right kind of money and that kind of thing. Sylvester McCoy is all for it. And of course, Sylvester's got a whole another career going on with The Hobbit right now. And I absolutely adore his audios with Ace and Hex, by the way. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they have to come back. And I don't think I'll be depressed if it doesn't have all the doctors. I mean, we're not going to get an 11th Doctor's episode, you know? And it wouldn't crush me if it was that way. And I don't need Christopher Eccleston to come back. I don't need the regeneration from Paul McGann to Chris. Some people want that or desire that. I don't necessarily need it. But I think we're going to see a lot of things like Noel Clark sort of, you know, leaked that Mickey was coming back for something next year. Hmm. John Barrowman has said that he'd love to come back as Captain Jack, and certainly Stephen Moffat created that character. So if anybody was going to bring in Captain Jack, it would be possibly Mr. Moffat. So, and he's a huge Doctor Who fan, so he would love to do that. Is there somebody from the past that you would love to see again? Do you need to see possibly where Martha is with Mickey, or do you need Donna just walking past?
I really would love to see the Eighth Doctor. I think the movie, the god-awful movie that they produced was really unfair to Paul McGann as the Doctor, because he's excellent in the Big Finish series. And I would love to see maybe a little more information on what happened in the Time War and how that regeneration happened. I don't think we're going to get any more real details far away from that story arc, but it would be nice to see Paul McGann take on the role of the Doctor in video once again and have him being part of something.
Okay, Master. Would you want John Sim Master, or would you want another Master at this point? Because there's been speculation about John Sim, and he's denied it. He's like, no.
No, I would like to see what other incarnations of the Master might come down the pike. We've seen him, and his story's been put to bed, you know.
Referring back to the 96 telemovie, lots of injury. There's a great documentary on that DVD, by the way, if you ever get a chance. It really goes into how and the why and what happened in bringing that movie to fruition. It is, in fact, at Gallifrey this year, they had a bit of a reunion with the TV movie cast. I think time and distance have passed where I don't dislike it as much as I did that night I was watching it.
Right.
I was kind of, you know, like, when I originally watched it. And I sat down and watched it like 5 years ago. Again, it had been a long time since I watched it. And I realized, wow, this really is the blueprint for the RTD era. And it makes a lot of sense. And so there's a lot there that's worth a look. And I agree. I think out of everybody, and certainly we've seen Paul McGann referenced to a couple of times since Family of Blood and Human Nature. And I think it's good. I think it would be really good to give him some type of closure, or even a spinoff series or an animated series. Cause I didn't dislike the David Tennant computer generated animated stories. Those were not horrible to me.
You know, I saw a animated version of Big Finish's Shada. It didn't do much for me, but the actual drama did. The actual BBC audio of the drama did, but
It was no scream of the Shaka. It was. don't look that up on YouTube, kids. And you can, though, look if you're needing a doctor fix. You can go find Pond Life if you hadn't seen them already. That's kind of a prequel up to the run of Series 7A. And there was a coda that was done, which was a scene that they were unable to film that has Rory's dad in it. And they got Arthur Darvill to come back and read the lines. And it was a letter he wrote to his dad that explains what happened to him and Amy. And that's available on the BBC website. It's a nice little kind of touching piece because there is one or two spots where you just go, but what about the dad? And they actually did have a scene. They just didn't get to film it. So Arthur reads this very touching, moving thing, and I think it fits really, really well. And I don't know if that'll be on the DVD, but you can find that on the BBC website. Or in these things called the show notes, you can go over to eolshow.com and find all this and more at those show notes. Byron, you were telling me that you love to go through the show notes at times.
I do. And I actually have one thing to add into the ever-growing pile of things to throw into the show notes. If you're looking for some classic era Doctor goodness while you wait for the Christmas episode to air, go check out the comic relief creation called Curse of the Fatal Death.
Yep.
You must watch it. Rowan Atkinson would have made an excellent Doctor. Yeah,
hits on every Doctor Who trope and has a little bit of Stephen Moffat in there too. Who knew? Very funny stuff and definitely worth a watch. I actually have that on my hard drive. It is fun to go back and look at.
And The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Daleks. That's another thing I just found on YouTube last night. Go look at the show notes and watch that as well. It will make you laugh.
Remember, if you need your EOL fix and you're not getting a regular episode or hearing one of these incredibly long extras, you can actually go and follow us on Twitter. That's twitter.com/EOLshow. And that has all sorts of crazy links that are sent there too. And some of it comes up from our own personal links and some from the third chairs. Crazy stuff that we find along the way and scary stories that might refer back to other episodes. And of course, the Ricky Morning Wake Up songs, which are the alter ego of my good friend, the rock star. So there's lots of good fun to be had there. And of course, we have EOL songs that are posted there too. Remember, you can leave us a iReport right there in iBlink Radio if you're listening to us on iBlink Radio on Android or iOS. If you don't have iBlink Radio, you can get that app for free at either one of those stores, the Play Market, or over there at the iOS App Store. Or drop us an email, resources@serotalk.com. That's resources@serotalk.com. And Byron, where can people find you on the interwebs in case they want to follow your blue box self?
Well, you can find me up on the interwebs. I'm on twitter.com/BYRON27. That's Byron27. I'm also on Facebook. That address is facebook.com/ByronLee27, BYRONLEE27. And of course, my own personal corner of the internet, bigger on the inside than on the outside, www.byronlee.com, BYRONLEE.com. That's two E's at the end.
I appreciate your time and sitting here with me to just go on and on and on and on and on about Doctor Who, my friend.
We're such geeks.
I know, and I revel in it. It is a good thing. It actually has gotten me work. I mean, I was a home theater rep for a long time, and I mean, honestly, I come by it very, very, very true to my nature. And we revel in these kinds of things here on EOL. And hey, if you've got one moment, please rate us on the iTunes store. If you don't leave us a comment in the blog, or if you don't have a moment, just rate us in the iTunes store. We'd really appreciate that. It helps all our podcasts on the Sarah Talk Podcast Network by going ahead and rating the show right there in iTunes. So that'll do it for Ranger 1138 in the third chair, filling in for the second chair, Mr. Byron 27. We will see you soon and talk more about, well, stuff. And we go out on a classic of classics about the Doctor.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye.
The void beyond the mind, the empty space that circles time. I see where others stumble blind to seek a truth they never find. Eternal wisdom is my guide. I am the Doctor. Through cosmic waste the TARDIS flies to taste the secret source of life. A present science can't deny exists within, outside, behind the latitude of
minds. I am the Doctor. My voyage dissects the course of time. Who knows, you say, but are you right? Who searches deep to find the light that glows so darkly in the night? Toward that point, I guide my fleet. As fingers move to end mankind, metallic teeth begin to grind. With sword of truth, I turn to fight the satanic powers of the night. Is your faith before your mind? Know me. Am I the Doctor?
Same time, there comes a time for a companion where they say, I can't keep doing this.
You know, if you're going to go big finish. Thank you, dog. My dog watches high definition television and he will bark at the TV, especially if there's a PetSmart commercial or something like that. So, no, I have to be careful what I leave it on during the day, because even something like MSNBC will have a PetSmart commercial or something, and he'll get all bent out of shape. But he loves to watch high-definition television, absolutely adores it. Can't watch anything with horses, can't watch Game of Thrones, nothing like that. He'll just bark at it.
See, here I thought he was just barking at the big reveal.
The concept of Doctor Who and being in a blue box? Right. Yeah. No, he actually was barking at Curse of the Black Spot the other day, and I was like, why is he barking at that? That has no aliens, no monsters. He was barking at the siren. I guess she was singing in a place where dogs can hear or something. But every time the siren came up, he barked at her.
Oh, and my goodness.
He's barked at Daleks before, too, which is awesome because Daleks are my favorite. But
well, yeah, three. Well, Daleks deserve to be barked at. You know, yeah, absolutely. Just, they're a lot in life.